Welcome back to Mechanical Dreams, the podcast where we untangle the wires of machine learning and natural language processing. I am Professor Norris, and as always, I am joined by my brilliant student, Linda, who consistently manages to find papers that keep me up at night.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Professor. I try my best. Today, we are looking at a paper that tackles something we have all been whispering about in the labs, the impending data wall. What happens when the internet just is not big enough anymore?
Ah, the data wall. It feels like only yesterday we were reading the chinchilla paper, thinking we had it all figured out. Just scale your compute and your data proportionally, right? Keep that magical 20 tokens per parameter ratio, and the loss will just keep gracefully gliding down.
Exactly. The classical compute optimal scaling laws by Hoffman and Kaplan were beautiful, but they had a huge silent assumption baked right into them, the data abundance assumption. They essentially assume fresh, high-quality pre-training tokens are just freely available, falling from the sky like rain.
Which, as anyone who has tried to scrape and deduplicate a massive dataset knows, is definitely not the case. We're hitting a point where compute budgets are growing exponentially, but our supply of pristine, human-generated text is finite. It's expensive to curate, and quite frankly, we're running out of it.
Right, and that's exactly why LLM pre-training is entering a completely new regime. We can't just follow chinchilla blindly anymore. If your compute budget keeps growing, but your data set is capped, what do? You have to spend that extra compute on derived tokens.
Derived tokens? By that, you mean things like multi-epoch training, where we just repeat the data, or perhaps using synthetic data like paraphrasing or distillation.
Precisely. We take our fixed corpus, let's call it D, and we generate a derived corpus, D prime. The paper I brought today is called Bridging Compute and Data Optimal Pre-Training by Tien Kin, Kimia Hamidieh, and David Alvarez Mellis from Harvard and MIT. They're asking the million-dollar question. For a model of size N trained on a fixed corpus D, how much can additional compute actually reduce the loss?
Now that is a question worth asking, because historically the conventional wisdom was that repeating data just leads to overfitting. You do maybe one or two epochs and then you stop. If you push it to four, you're just turning expensive electricity into heat.
Yes, but that's what makes this paper so exciting. They aren't just guessing. They propose a unified mathematical framework to actually bridge the gap between compute optimal scaling, where data is unbounded, and data optimal scaling, where your data set is totally fixed, but your compute is unbounded.
Unbounded compute on a fixed data set. That sounds like an asymptote waiting to happen. I'm naturally skeptical that we can just recycle data endlessly and expect the model to get smarter. But I know you, Linda. You wouldn't bring this up unless they had the empirical results to back it up.
So, Linda, at the end of our last segment, you dangled this unified mathematical framework in front of me. How exactly do the authors propose we measure the value of a recycled token without violating the laws of information theory?
They propose what they call the compute data, or CD, scaling laws. It is actually a beautifully simple extension of the classic chinchilla equation that we all know and love.
Right, the formula burned into the retinas of every grad student listening. You have your irreducible loss, your penalty for having a finite model size, and your penalty for having a finite data set.
Exactly. What Kin and the team do is swap out the data set size in that denominator for a new term, effective tokens, which they denote as D effective. And D effective is simply your fresh tokens, D, plus eta times your derived tokens, D prime.
Ah, eta, the classic Greek letter of choice for we need a coefficient here to make the math work. I assume eta represents some kind of exchange rate for the derived data.
That is the perfect way to think about it. Eta is the token effectiveness function. It ranges from 0 to 1. If eta is 1, your derived tokens, whether they are repeated epochs or paraphrased documents, are a perfect substitute for fresh data. If eta is 0, the model learns absolutely nothing new, and you just turned expensive GPU cycles into waste heat.
I like that framing. It creates a continuous mathematical bridge between two extremes. If I set D prime to 0, the eta term vanishes and I just get the classical compute optimal chinchilla scaling law back. But what happens if I let D prime run to infinity? Does the validation loss just keep dropping forever?
Not forever. If you take D prime to infinity, the equation approaches what they call the data optimal limit. Imagine you have a fixed data set of, say, 10 billion tokens, but you have an unlimited compute budget. You can paraphrase it, repeat it, and distill it as much as you want. The CD scaling law predicts the absolute lowest loss you can achieve on that frozen corpus before the model simply cannot extract any more signal.
That is a very bold claim. They're claiming to map the asymptote of what any training run can achieve on a fixed data set. But let me put my skeptic hat on for a moment. This exchange rate, eta, cannot possibly be a constant. If I read the same textbook 10 times, I get less out of it each time. A language model must experience those same diminishing returns as it starts to memorize the data set.
You hit the nail on the head, Professor. That was their central empirical challenge. They knew they could not just assume eta was a static number. They had to actually measure how the effectiveness decays.
So they actually fit this eta function empirically. That must have taken a tremendous amount of compute.
It did. They consumed over 250,000 H100 hours. They ran extensive sweeps on the ALMO 3 architecture, looking at models ranging from 14 million to 600 million parameters. They trained on the DOMA 3 corpus and strictly separated the fresh data from the derived data.
And by derived data, what exactly were they testing in these sweeps? Just multi-epoch training?
They tested two specific data expansion strategies. First, standard multi-epoch repetition. Second, paraphrasing, where they used a small instruction-tuned model to rewrite documents in different styles, like Q&A or math formats. They wanted to see if rewriting the text kept the eta value higher than just blindly repeating it.
So they're throwing both raw repetition and synthetic augmentation into this D prime bucket and using eta to judge the winner. That is a fantastic experimental setup. But I'm dying to know what they found. Does eta drop off a cliff after Epic 2?
It is highly dynamic, and it's far from constant. But to understand exactly how it decays, we have to look at how it interacts with model size and data availability, which leads us straight to a concept they call the saturation ceiling.
So we left off on a bit of a cliffhanger. We know this effectiveness function, eta, is highly dynamic. It measures the value of derived data, like repeated epochs or paraphrases. But how exactly does it decay? Does it just fall off a cliff after the first epoch?
It is not a simple cliff, Professor. To really understand the decay, the authors recast eta into three highly interpretable variables. First, the model size, N. Second, the tokens per parameter ratio, or TPP. And third, the expansion ratio, which they call R, representing how aggressively you expand beyond your fresh data set.
Ah, TPP, the classic chinchilla metric. We typically want that around 20. So how does eta behave as TPP changes?
They found that eta decays monotonically as TPP grows. Think about it this way. If your TPP is low, meaning your model is starved for fresh data relative to its size, derived data is incredibly valuable. But if your TPP is high and you already have an abundance of fresh data, repeating it gives you very little benefit.
That makes perfect intuitive sense. If I've only assigned my students a single paper for the whole semester, reading it twice is probably helpful. But if they have already read the entire library, rereading that one paper won't magically make them pass the final exam.
That is a great analogy, and they found a similar decay with the expansion ratio, R. As you add more and more derived data, the value of each additional token drops, but the real mathematical beauty happens when you look at the total effective derived data, which is eta times d prime.
Right, because if eta decays slowly, eta times d prime could theoretically still grow to infinity. You could just brute force your way to zero loss.
Exactly, but the data proves that does not happen. Eta times d prime fundamentally plateaus. No matter how many derived tokens you add, the loss curve flattens. The authors formally define this plateau as the saturation ceiling, and they denote it as R star.
R star. So this is the ultimate limit of data recycling. What does this R star actually represent in practice?
It represents the maximum number of fresh equivalent tokens your corpus can yield through data expansion, expressed as a multiple of your original dataset D. So if your R star is, say, 2, it means the absolute maximum effective data you can ever get is your original data plus 2 times that amount in derived value.
Meaning my total effective data saturates at D times 1 plus R star. That is incredibly clean. But surely this ceiling isn't a universal constant. Does R star change depending on the model?
It absolutely does, and this is where it gets fascinating. They fit a power law for R star and found that it shrinks as both TPP and model size N grow. In other words, larger models saturate at a lower value and at a much faster rate.
Wait, let me make sure I'm hearing you correctly. Larger models saturate faster. You'd think a bigger, more capable brain could extract more hidden signal from the same data.
It's actually the opposite. A larger model is so capable that it absorbs the information in the original corpus much more efficiently the first time around. By the time you show it the data for a second or third epoch, there's simply less juice left to extract.
That is a profound insight. A 600 million parameter model generalizes the patterns on Epoch 1 so well that Epoch 2 is just boring to it. It has already learned what it needs to learn from that text.
Precisely. The authors even ablated their power law formula to prove this. They showed that if you remove either the model size or the TPP dependence from the equation, the fit to the empirical data degrades significantly. This firmly rejects previous theories that assumed the saturation budget was just a constant across all models.
So they've completely mapped the terrain. With this CD scaling law, a practitioner can predict the exact point where adding more epochs or more paraphrases becomes a waste of electricity.
Yes, they can. And because the authors mapped R star for both multi-epoch repetition and for synthetic paraphrasing, they were able to set up a head-to-head comparison between the two strategies.
Oh, a plot twist. Everyone assumes synthetic data is the silver bullet right now. Don't tell me simple repetition actually puts up a fight.
It does more than put up a fight, Professor. Depending on where you are on that terrain, it actually wins.
All right, Linda, you cannot just drop a cliffhanger like that and leave me hanging. We were just talking about R star, the maximum effective data ceiling. Are you really telling me that simply reading the exact same text twice gives a higher ceiling than reading a clever, synthetically generated paraphrase?
In certain regimes, yes. The authors mapped out the 95% confidence intervals for the R star of both strategies, and they found a very clear crossover point. It turns out, if you are training a very small model, say under 50 million parameters, and you have a small data budget, paraphrasing is actually the winner.
Okay, that part makes sense. A small model might struggle to generalize from a single pass of complex human text. Paraphrasing it into a Q&A format or a simplified wiki style gives the model different angles on the same concepts. It acts like a diversity boost.
Exactly. But as we discussed in the last chapter, larger models absorb information much more efficiently. When the authors looked at larger models, specifically as you cross that 190 million parameter threshold in their sweeps, the confidence intervals cross over. Repetition actually significantly beats paraphrasing.
That is wild. So a larger model gets more value out of seeing the exact same raw data again than it does from seeing a fresh, synthetically generated rewrite.
Yes, and it gets even more extreme. If you extrapolate their fitted CD scaling law to really large scales, like models over 7 billion parameters with large data budgets of 4 times the chinchilla optimum, paraphrasing becomes largely ineffective. It is simply not worth the compute.
Let me think about why that would be. They used a specific model to generate these paraphrases, right? I imagine if you use a small or medium-sized model to rewrite the text, you are inherently bottlenecking the complexity of the data.
Bingo. They used a 1.7 billion parameter instruction model to generate the paraphrased documents. While it creates stylistic diversity, it likely smooths out the rich, long-tail complexities of human language. A massive frontier model will memorize those simple synthetic patterns almost instantly.
So the synthetic data is almost too clean, too predictable for a large model. The original, messy, human-written text still holds more latent signal, even on the second or third read. That is a massive reality check for the synthetic data hype train.
It really is. And it also provides a reality check on some of our older rules of thumb. For example, there's been this accepted wisdom in the community, the quote-unquote 4-epoch rule, suggesting you can safely repeat your pre-training data up to 4 times before things degrade.
Right. I've definitely cited that in a grant proposal or two. Does the CD scaling law invalidate the 4-epoch rule?
Not completely, but it adds crucial nuance. By predicting the R-star ceiling, their extrapolations show that the 4-epoch rule really only holds for medium-scale models, around 3 billion parameters, near the 1x chinchilla data scale.
And because we established that larger models saturate faster, I assume the recommended epoch count shrinks as the model gets bigger.
Exactly. The recommended epoch count strictly decreases as your model size and your tokens per parameter ratio grow. If you're training a massive frontier model, you can't just lazily loop your dataset 4 times and expect chinchilla-level returns.
This is incredibly practical. The authors aren't just giving us a theoretical asymptote. They're providing a literal playbook. Don't over-rely on simple paraphrasing for massive models, and don't just leave your training loop running for 4 epochs out of habit.
Precisely. It forces practitioners to make a deliberate choice about where to allocate their resources. Are you going to invest in generating better synthetic data, curating more fresh data, or scaling your model? Which leads perfectly into the final part of their framework, where they divide the entire training landscape into 3 distinct regimes.
So, Linda, let's tie this all together. We know how eta decays, we know about the R-star saturation ceiling, and we just learned why repetition can actually beat paraphrasing for large models. But how does a practitioner actually use this to plan a multi-million dollar training run?
That is the ultimate payoff of this paper. By combining all these insights, the authors use their CD scaling law to carve the entire training landscape into 3 distinct operational regimes. It serves as a diagnostic map to tell you exactly what resource is bottlenecking your model.
A diagnostic map for LLM training. I love it. Let's walk through them. What is regime number 1?
The first is the compute-bound regime. This sits nicely between the classic compute-optimal chinchilla line and the new data-optimal limit we discussed. In this zone, for a given amount of fresh data, adding derived tokens still actively reduces your loss. Your only real constraint here is compute.
Okay, so if I'm compute-bound, I should just keep those GPUs humming on my derived data, whether that is a second epoch or a high-quality paraphrase. What happens when I hit the ceiling?
Then you enter the second regime, data bound. This is when your derived data has fully saturated that R-star ceiling. Throwing more compute at the problem will basically do nothing. The only way to further reduce the loss is to go out and curate brand new, fresh tokens.
So that is the dreaded data wall, finally mapped out mathematically. You cannot compute your way out of the data bound regime. And what is the final regime?
The third is model bound. This is the absolute floor. Both your compute and your data have saturated. Even if you magically found another trillion fresh tokens, your model simply lacks the capacity to absorb any more knowledge. The binding resource is N, the parameter count. You have to build a bigger brain.
compute-bound, data-bound, and model-bound. It provides a generalized joint compute-data Pareto frontier. Instead of the old chinchilla rule where you just scale compute and data in lockstep, this tells you exactly which lever to pull based on your current constraints.
Exactly. If you are in a data-scarce, low-compute scenario, increasing your compute by looping data is incredibly effective. But as you push the budget higher, the optimal path bends. It rotates toward needing fresh data until you eventually hit that basin where only fresh data matters.
It is a sobering but incredibly useful tool for anyone burning millions of dollars on a cluster. You can fit the CD scaling law on a tiny, cheap model, extrapolate the R-star ceiling, and know ahead of time exactly when your returns will vanish. Brilliant paper.
It really brings some much-needed rigor to how we think about data scarcity. And that wraps up today's paper.
Linda, you always bring the most cutting-edge reading material to the show. Thank you all for tuning in to Mechanical Dreams. Keep dreaming in high dimensions.
See you next week.